we're going to have to rebuild within this wild, wild west of information flow some sort of curating function.
It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve.
We've got to maybe do something with the internet.
Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Somebody will say, oh, freedom of speech, freedom of speech. These are foolish people.
Spying on scammers by hacking them where they live. TikTok moderators were told to suppress posts from ugly people, the disabled, and the poor. How to balance privacy rights of patients during a pandemic. And Amazon is terminating seller accounts of coronavirus price gougers. All this and more in Access of Easy, number 137. Hey everybody, Mark Jeftovic here with another edition of Access of Easy for the week of March 17th, well, 16th. Today is the 17th as I record this. I wrote the thing yesterday. And I don't know about you, I'm kind of a little bit in shell shock, just the way this situation globally is changing on a day-to-day basis and just accelerating. It really is unprecedented in living memory, I think is the only way to describe it. Let's try and get right down to it. The quote last week was, we are all Keynesians now, or Keynesians now. That was a trick question, and I'm sorry for that, because everybody is so on edge and stressed out that the least helpful thing I could do was hit you all with a trick question on the quote contest. But like most people, you thought it was Richard Nixon, and he's frequently attributed with saying that when he took the U.S. dollar off the Bretton Woods standard. But what he actually said was, I am now a Keynesian in economics. The quote itself was actually Milton Friedman. Anyway, this week's quote, I think, is probably right on the money. There are decades when nothing happens, and then there are weeks when decades happen. Remember the rules, no searching it up online, and the first person to post the correct answer to the show notes page will get their next domain or hosting renewal on us. So the show notes for this week's edition will be, we're still on the EasyDNS.com site for just a little bit longer, EasyDNS.com/podcast/137. Okay. So spying on scammers by hacking them where they live. We've all received those bogus telemarketing calls that come from, people pretending to be your tech support department or a security team, and they've discovered some anomalous activity on your computer, and it's all just a scam to get you to do, one or more things like hand over your credit card details or install some malware on your computers, or both. So this ingenious security researcher who's posting his videos on YouTube, he turns the tables on these guys. When they connect to him, he knows they're going to run a probe on his computer. He's got tools set up to detect where they're coming from. Then he turns around and he hacks them, or at least tries to. So he posted a video it's a four-part series. It's just fascinating. He managed to put a reverse shell on one of these operations, and he even hacked the CCTV feed in the office of the telemarketers. And it's just a really, he gets right in looking at the video of these guys who are actually on the phone trying to scam them at the time. It's just a fascinating look at how these boiler rooms operate. You'll want to check that out. Virgin Media exposes 900,000 user details via unprotected database. When I saw this headline, I just kind of put it in my clippings file, and I was positive this was going to be Bob Dianchenko finding a wide open MongoDB somewhere. And I even said as much when I wrote up the email version yesterday, but alas, my bet is wrong. It was not him. It was discovered by a security team called TurgeonSec, and it wasn't an unprotected MongoDB. In this case, it was a misconfigured database within Virgin's network that you could access without a password. Always nice. And the account details of 900,000 users were exposed, including email addresses, contact addresses, and cell phone numbers. And that pencils out to about 15% of Virgin's customer base. TikTok moderators were told to suppress posts from ugly people, the disabled, and the poor. This is documents obtained by The Intercept. And TikTok is that video sharing app. My daughter and her friends are all over this thing. And, you know, that's all they do all day long. And they, in the documents, it was instructing moderators to, quote, suppress posts created by users deemed too ugly, poor, or disabled for the platform, end quote. They also outline methodologies for suppressing content that depict political dissent or criticism of the government. Quote, live-streamed military movements and natural disasters, video that defames civil servants, and other material that might threaten national security has been suppressed alongside videos showing rural poverty, slums, beer bellies, and crooked smiles. One document goes so far as to instruct moderators to scan uploads for cracked walls and disreputable decorations in users' own homes, then to effectively punish these poor TikTok users by artificially narrowing their audiences. So I guess it's not just Twitter and Facebook that attenuate behavior and users that color outside the lines on their platforms. This one I found kind of funny. Wuhan students game app store to dodge their homework. And when I told my daughter about this one, she said, you know, oh, my school would have done exactly that. In China's Wuhan, I said Wuhan province here, but it's actually Wuhan is in the Hubei province. So now I should get that fixed before we mail it. Anyway, schools were shut down already and students were assigned homework to be completed using an app called DingTalk. But instead of doing their homework, they spammed the app stores with one-star ratings to get DingTalk kicked off the platform. So they flooded the app store with 15,000 one-star reviews in a single day. They were able to get its ranking tanked down from 4.9 to a 1.4. And DingTalk, which is a subsidiary of Alibaba, like it seems almost everything in China is, took to social media to plead with the kids to stop posting. Tech giants advising all hands to work remote. So over the last week, we've seen announcement after announcement coming out from the tech giants like Google, Twitter, Apple, Amazon, you know, work from home. And Apple, of course, also closed all retail stores outside of China. I think that was 500 internationally. And I think this is one of the multiple tectonic shifts that we're going to see continue past the end of this crisis when things finally calm down. I think a lot of businesses are going to think twice about going back to physical offices once they realize that they actually can function remotely in a lot of cases. And, you know, once they make that mental and cultural shift doing it. So, I'm going to be working on writing up a guide for companies that want to or are thinking about going fully remote. So, you know, watch this space for more details on that. And as most of you probably know, EasyDNS, we went fully remote last June, which was kind of fortuitous in the timing. So I'm glad we don't have to try to make the shift now, although it was pretty easy to do at the time. How to balance privacy rights of patients during a pandemic. So here's an article in theconversation.com that looks at the issue of protecting patient privacy, you know, during a situation like this, you know, something fast moving and unprecedented like coronavirus. And this one focuses specifically on information privacy, not wider human rights like welding people into their apartments to keep them there. In China, people have found their names and addresses and occupations in online lists after they self-reported to authorities about their travel history and their possible contacts. Also, it looks at things like in China, you have mass facial recognition scanning. They do things like pull cough and flu medicines off of store shelves in order to force people who want them to have to report to a doctor first. They use drones to remind people to wear face masks. I don't really know how that quite works. And the list goes on, and so do the privacy implications. This American blogger spotted coronavirus before the mainstream media. So, in my mind, there's an underlying theme to all this, and that's most governments worldwide are playing catch up to all this, and most of the quality information around this is coming from outside the mainstream media. So the first reporting on what we now know as coronavirus or COVID-19 seems to have been via Sharon Sanders of Winter Haven, Florida, who runs the Flu Trackers website. She stayed up until near dawn the night of December 31st on 2019, last day of, watching reports coming out of the Wuhan, China's Hubei province. And so she made her first post at 1:11 a.m. on December 31st. Quote, "There were 7 cases of viral pneumonia outbreak in Wuhan. Most of them came from the merchants in Wuhan's South China seafood city. When this station asked Song Shuli, the director of publicity department of the National Health Commission, she said she was still learning about the situation." End quote. Only a few mainstream news outlets picked up on the story, all of them in Asia. Western media didn't pick up on it till January 6th, when the New York Times ran a story about how a pneumonia-like illness had sickened 59 in Wuhan. And, you know, the rest is kind of, we're living it now. So I've mentioned numerous times, Chris Martinson's YouTube channel, Peak Prosperity, is a good one. He put his first report out on January 24th, a short 6-minute coronavirus update, but he's been doing like really high quality daily updates ever since. And I also noticed that Bert Hubert, who's the creator of Power DNS, and he's also does a lot of science research, he's been weighing in with some pretty good articles on his website as well. Amazon is terminating seller accounts of price gougers. So this issue around price gouging is pretty interesting. You all know I'm a libertarian and I follow Austrian school economics for the most part, which for most of the time wants you to leave things alone and let prices find their own level. Back in 2017, economist named Bob Murphy wrote an article called 3 Good Things About Price Gouging. And whenever the topic comes up, I usually trot out that article and, you know, show people that article, and it's well written and people look at it and go, oh, you know, that kind of makes a lot of sense, because in all cases before what we're talking about now, the effects of not allowing or allowing prices to find their own level in some localized disaster makes a huge difference. So when you allow the prices to float, it incentivizes people from outside the disaster area to bring additional supply to the area where they're needed most. But when the pricing power is capped, the supply goes to zero in those same areas where they're most needed. But now that the affected area is the entire world, does the same argument stand up? So when profiteers go on multi-state road trips hitting every Costco and literally sweeping all the Lysol and hand sanitizers off the shelves and into their pickup trucks, intending to resell them at an exorbitant markup on Amazon, are they providing that much needed increased supply to the affected area? And I would have to look at that and say they're not. They're actually sucking supply out of the affected areas. So, you know, my heart doesn't really bleed when I see Amazon, and I've also heard Kijiji are like canceling the accounts of price gougers that are doing this sort of thing. It seems to be the right thing to do. The world's most powerful supercomputer tasked with finding COVID-19 vaccine, a supercomputer called Summit at the U.S. Department of Energy's Oak Ridge National Lab, is being marshaled into the hunt for a COVID-19 vaccine. It's described as the world's most powerful and smartest supercomputer, and it will be used to analyze 77 small molecule drug compounds, which may be promising in the development of a cure. On a related note, the COVID-19 virus itself has already been isolated by a Canadian team comprised of researchers at Sunnybrook Research Institute, the University of Toronto, and McMaster University. So I didn't really know what that means to isolate a virus, but it turns out that unlike bacteria, which can be cultured on their own in like a petri dish, viruses need some kind of animal tissue to host it. So they have to be isolated before you can even work on them to sort of analyze them and test vaccines. That's what that's all about. And apparently, you know, it's the first part of a process to sort of get anywhere with finding a vaccine. That is pretty well it for this week. The show notes page again will be easydns.com/podcast/137. I you know, feel like I kind of stumbled through this morning's episode, I'll go back and edit out the egregious kind of mental lapses. But everybody just kind of hang in there. I don't know what to say. I just stay safe, stay healthy. And I guess right now the name of the game is social distancing and self-isolation. So hunker down, you know, stay in touch with your friends and colleagues and family over the internet using these tools of communication. Thank God we've got this global communications grid right now. Let's just all get through this together. Okay. Hang in there and we will talk to you next week.